back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, I haven't said this in a while. But, man, it's just great having your voice on the airways. It truly is, and I'm honored, man, that you have decided to do this. And since the first time I had you on, something special about the way you do the things you do and with your knowledge, and it's so vast, and it touches a lot of different areas. And, again, you make it understandable to average Joes like myself. So, man, it's great to have you on the airways. Let's do this. The CDC, Sandy, is relaxing all of these rules, many of these rules, with COVID. Have we come to a point, Sandy, that you talked about a year or so ago when you talked about eventually this is going to be treated similar to the flu? Have they gotten enough? Has the CDC gathered enough information, Sandy, now that this is not going to be as terrifying as it's been?
Well, I think it's all empirical. The difference between a pandemic and an endemic. Endemic is basically the flu. It's something that it's a disease that just about everyone is susceptible to getting, and a large percentage of people get it. But it's not particularly dangerous to our medical system or to society. And so, I think that definitely the CDC is, as they look at COVID, they're beginning to think this thing's beginning to look more like an endemic. And I think the way they decide that is by what it's doing to the hospital system and how many people are in the hospitals as the result of the disease, and therefore how much of a threat it poses to the medical system. I think COVID still poses a threat to individuals, so does the flu. People who are particularly vulnerable to respiratory diseases and the potential complications of it can die from the flu, and they're continuing to die from COVID. I think we're having deaths from COVID at the rate of about 200 or to 300 a day in the United States, which is a lot of deaths. But it's not... It is apparently not burdening the health system. And so they're beginning to look at COVID and saying, look, we've got to treat this as an endemic. We've got to take down our guard. We can't cripple our economy. We can't continue to impose restrictions on people's lives, particularly because the country has COVID fatigue. We have gotten used to not wearing masks. Asking people to wear masks again will be difficult. And I think the CDC realizes there better be a real and palpable danger that we're asking the people to react to before we begin to raise that kind of concern again.
So, Sandy, do you think that we're at the point because we've had enough people inoculated and the fact that more people than we even know have contracted COVID and never knew it, and that immunity that they were talking about, we've gotten there?
Well, sure. I mean, it's a confluence, and I don't even think the medical community can figure out exactly the extent to which we've had a confluence of several circumstances. The disease itself has morphed in the direction of being less severe, apparently, and more transmissible. So more people are getting it, but it's a less severe disease when they get it. Maybe it's less severe for some people because they've been vaccinated or have already had the disease. But in any case, the end result of all that is we seem to have a disease we face that is very transmissible, but not as dangerous to us as the initial version of COVID when we first saw it 2 years ago. So the end result of that is we're going to treat it differently. We also have more experience. 2 years ago when we were all worried about it, we were actually worried about dying from it. Now most of us are worried about the inconvenience of being quarantined or otherwise sick for a week.
You know, Sandy, before we move, I want to now have you chime in on what's happening with the monkeypox. And because, you know, that's really, it's kind of similar. If you look at how long monkeypox has been around, and the fact that, you know, it was taken lightly. Initially, and where the origin of it was, and it's similar, you know, then, you know, with what took place when COVID came in. We were told that there are different factors. Certain people were going to be susceptible. You know, monkeypox, we've heard gay men having sex and those kind of things. The rest of us don't need to worry about any of those things. Sandy, it's turning out that that's not solely the case, that there are other things, and did we take this too lightly?
Well, we'll find out, won't we, in terms of the outcome. But, you know, it turns out that there's going to be a constant stream of diseases that come out of that arise in animals and spread to humans. There's some new virus that they found in China that relates to shrews, little right. tiny mites carry a disease, and maybe those shrews can spread it to humans, or maybe humans got it from direct contact with shrews. But, you know, monkeypox came out of monkeys, and Ebola came from monkeys, and AIDS came from monkeys. And so it turns out that viruses, many of them, I think I read that probably 3/4 of the ones that humans are susceptible to are actually came from animals. So we're going to see a constant stream of new and different viruses that we face. Happily, monkeypox is apparently susceptible to and protected against by the smallpox virus vaccination. So we do have an arsenal that will help defend people from monkeypox. And I just heard today that Wisconsin is getting a fairly large shipment of vaccination material that will protect the populace from monkeypox. So do I think it poses the same threat as COVID? No, I don't think it does.
So, Sandy, I want to move quickly from that conversation to Ukraine. The Wall Street Journal this morning, Ukraine scrapes to pay its soldiers as Western funds slow to arrive. You know, you hear about the great heroes, the Ukrainian military, and those guys who are on the front lines fighting, and you don't think about money. Well, we don't. We're not there fighting. And so they're fighting for their countries. But we fail to understand they have families, and their families need to be sustained while they're got their lives on the line. And so normally people who are in the militaries across the earth are paid during the time they're there. But it turns out that Ukraine is suffering mightily and don't have the resources to pay the men who are on the front line fighting. Sandy, we've kind of heard that a little bit with Russia too. At some point in time, that begins to wear on. Excuse me, those men who are fighting, that their families aren't being taken care of.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, some of the war crimes that are alleged to have occurred by the Russian soldiers are probably simply the Russian soldiers who are apparently, I mean, the conscripted Russian soldiers are paid very low wages, very low wages. And so it's probably very likely that someone like that is going to steal a candelabra or something of value that they find as a way to essentially compensate themselves and their families for what they're going through. It's the way the Roman Legion funded its legions, was essentially looting and pillaging. It's war is a terrible thing. It's doing a terrible thing to the people of Ukraine, as well as the economy of Ukraine, and of course the soldiers who bear the brunt of the problems of warfare. And supposedly we were We've committed already more than $53 billion worth of aid to Ukraine, and about $9 billion of that is weaponry. So apparently a lot of it is money.
Yes.
So where has that money gone? So, I mean, possibly the soldiers aren't getting the money because it's lining the pockets of other people in Ukraine.
You know, Sandy, Kiev is forced to print money to cover the cost of defending against Russia's invasion, which has plummeted Ukraine's economy. Now, you would think, as they're talking about what this says again, the Western funds are slow to arrive. So when you ask what's happening with the money, a lot of it, or some of it, clearly is going towards paying the military of Ukraine. American dollars, it wouldn't surprise me.
Apparently it's not getting to them, or it's not getting to the soldiers. This article suggests the soldiers aren't getting paid. So I do think out of this war, in retrospect, there will be some kind of audits done. And like almost all wars, we'll find out that when we start sending billions of dollars into a war zone, only a portion of that money gets directed where we intended it to go, and a bunch of the money gets sidestepped. And the problem with Ukraine is that it has a long history of extreme corruption. So, yes, maybe Ukraine was headed in the direction of cleaning up corruption, but sending it $53 billion of various kinds of assistance is going to open that wound and open that potential for corruption.
You know, Sandy, those dollars, as you stated, will be unaccounted for. And let me ask you, so the United States government can't do anything about that, even once it audits all of those things. That's the price of war, right? I mean, I remember with the Iraqi war and Operation Desert Storm, and when they first went after Saddam Hussein, and there were conversations about semi-trailers full of $100 bills that disappeared that Saddam Hussein had, and nobody ever talked about what happened to all of that money. But is that the booty that generally happens in war that nobody wants to talk about?
Yeah, there's clearly when lots of money, Afghanistan, we sent lots of money.
Sandy, you got to hold on. Got to run to a break. I'm sorry. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.